Babylon, Lucifer, Syria, and Palestine. This is part one, obviously, since I don't think I could cover all of those four subjects in one sermon. Turn to Isaiah. We're going to read Isaiah 13 and Isaiah 14 to see if we can get some light on history and prophecy. All four of these names are in those two chapters, and we'll see how they are connected and what they have to do with the prophecies which are included in Isaiah 13 and Isaiah 14. And God willing, we'll see why God had the prophet in the previous chapter, chapter 12, with this, verse 6 of Isaiah 12, "Cry out and shout, thou inhabitant of Zion, for great is the Holy One of Israel in the midst of thee." So I believe, in fact I know, our study of the prophecy in Isaiah 13 and 14 will cause us to cry out and shout that God is great in the midst of his people. Isaiah 13, verse 1, "The burden of Babylon, which Isaiah, the son of Amoz, did see." Now this word burden is the Hebrew word massah, and it's used a number of times by Isaiah. In Strong's Concordance, it says it means burden, carry away, or prophecy, figuratively, an utterance of doom. And Isaiah uses it a number of times, such as in the burden of Moab, the burden of Damascus, of Egypt, the burden of Tyre, and so on. In each case, they're all followed by a prophecy of the destruction of those individual cities or empires. So this is the burden or the prophecy of doom of Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz did see. "Lift ye up a banner upon the high mountain, exalt the voice unto them, shake the hand, that they may go into the gates of the nobles." And here, the word banner is from the same word we find in the 11th chapter, which is translated there, ensign. The word is nace, and it stands for flag, signal, banner, ensign, or standard. And it is actually a military term for the banner or the ensign which military units display to identify each unit. Not for the enemy necessarily, of course, but so that the other parts of the military force know who they are. It identifies their friend. In chapter 11, where this same word is used, we've covered this before, but I think we should read this before we go on in chapter 13. Chapter 11 begins, "And there shall come forth a rod out of the stem of Jesse, and a branch shall go out of his root." The word branch here is capitalized, and we know Jesse was the father of David, so this obviously refers to Jesus Christ, who came through the line of David. And it is a kingdom prophecy. Verse 9, "They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, as the waters cover the sea." Verse 10, "And in that day there shall be a root of Jesse, which shall stand for an ensign." And this is that same word translated banner in chapter 13. "This root of Jesse shall stand for an ensign, sign or standard or banner of the people. To it shall the Gentiles or the nations seek, and his rest shall be glorious." The word Gentiles there means nations, and it says they'll seek this banner, or they'll turn to where this banner is displayed, and I believe those nations are identified in the next verses. "And it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people, which shall be left from Assyria and from Egypt and from Pathros and from Cush and from Elam and from Shinar and from Hamath and from the isles of the sea. And he shall set up an ensign," same word, "for the nations, and shall assemble the outcasts of Israel and gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth." So this is one of several passages which tell us that the regathering, or the gathering the second time, of Israel and Judah will be to the banner which is identified here as the root of Jesse, the branch, or Jesus Christ. So we know from this that the gathering of Israel at the end of the age would be as a Christian people. They would come to the nation or the place, to the mountain here, as it's called, where Jesus Christ was held up as the sign or the standard. So when we read in chapter 13 a command, lift ye up a banner upon the high mountain, it can only mean that Israel is to lift up or hold up Jesus Christ as the sign above the Zion nation. Not necessarily, again, as I say, for the enemy to see, but for Israel to see. They're to lift up, preach, exalt, hold up Jesus. In that verse 9 of Isaiah 11, we read, they shall not hurt nor destroy in my holy mountain. And that obviously is the Zion of Bible prophecy. It's called the Great Mountain, the Holy Mountain, in places such as Joel 3, where that great mountain Zion is delivered in a great last battle. So the command at the very beginning of this prophecy of the destruction of Babylon is to hold up Jesus Christ in Zion for the nations to see. In that verse 2, it says, exalt the voice unto them, shake the hand, that they may go into the gates of the nobles. And I believe that means also that this banner, or Jesus Christ, is to be taken to the rulers of that nation. That's how you go into the gates of the nobles. You take the banner or sign of Jesus Christ in Israel to that nation. And that phrase, shake the hand, is rather interesting. It sounds like you're to go in there and shake someone's hand in greeting, but that's not necessarily true, because it's mentioned a number of times, or that phrase is, in Isaiah 11, it's in verse 15, and the Lord shall utterly destroy the tongue of the Egyptian sea, and with his mighty wind shall he shake his hand over the river, and shall smite it in the seven streams, and make men go over dry shod. So God shakes his hand over something, and it dries up. Turn to Zechariah chapter 2, near the end of the Old Testament. And this is an end time prophecy. Verse 7 of Zechariah 2, deliver thyself, O Zion, that dwellest with the daughter of Babylon. So here is another prophecy where Zion and Babylon are somehow dwelling together. Verse 8, for thus saith the Lord of hosts, after the glory hath he sent me unto the nations which spoiled you, for he that toucheth you toucheth the apple of his eye. So here are some nations which spoiled or robbed Zion. Verse 9, for behold, I will shake mine hand upon them, and they shall be a spoil to their servants, and ye shall know that the Lord of hosts hath sent me. And then following that, verse 10, sing and rejoice, O daughter of Zion, for lo, I come, and I will dwell in the midst of thee, saith the Lord God. So Zechariah, I believe, is speaking of a deliverance of Zion, or this place where Israel is, and one of the ways it will be delivered is when God shakes his hand over or against the nations which have robbed Zion. So I believe this phrase in Isaiah 13, shake the hand, would have something to do with God's act that would weaken or destroy those who were opposed to Israel. Now, those of us who understand that America is that great Zion nation, we know that the nobles, or our civil rulers, are actually treasonous to the nation and are in opposition to Christian Israel. So what this might be is something that would weaken them, dry them up, so that God's people could go into those gates. In other words, take control of that government. Something will weaken them, that those who are lifting up Christ may go into the gates of the nobles or the rulers, into the government in Israel, without hindrance. And I think we are seeing more and more Christians becoming bolder and bolder, speaking against government and in favor of Christ and Christianity. According to this prophecy, we'll see more of that. Now, I believe other prophecies tell us that will happen. All right, now let's go on in verse 3 of Isaiah 13. I have commanded my sanctified ones, I have also called my mighty ones for my anger, even them that rejoice in my highness. Now that can only be a perfect description of Christian Israelites. It calls them the sanctified ones, my mighty ones, not the mighty ones of the world, but the mighty ones of God, those who are strong to the power of God, and them that rejoice in my highness. Now, of all the people of the earth, only Christian Israelites would fit all three of those things. Sanctified, mighty, and rejoicing in the coming rule of Jesus Christ upon the earth. And this all has to do, apparently, with an introduction to a prophecy of the doom of Babylon. Verse 4. The noise of a multitude in the mountains, like as of a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of the nations gathered together, for the Lord of hosts mustereth the host of the battle. In our Wednesday night Bible study, we've been reading Joel 3, so let's turn to that. For it appears that the battle that is to come is to be a battle which is organized and led by God Almighty. It is He who is mustering the nations to the great battle. In Joel, where we read this prophecy, we found that the entire book of Joel is an end-time prophecy, and it includes a description of what we could call world communism plundering the Israel people, then the Israel people turning to God, and then Israel's deliverance in a great battle. We'll read Joel 3, starting in verse 9. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles, or among the nations. Prepare war, wake up the mighty men, let all the men of war draw near, let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords, and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves, and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Hither cause thy mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be wakened, and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, for there will I sit to judge all the heathen round about. So this is the judging of the nations, which is in a great battle at the end of the age. Again, that battle, or those nations gathered to battle, are gathered by God Almighty. God Almighty is calling them to this battle. Verse 13, put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, get you down, for the press is full. The fat's overflow, for their wickedness is great. And we'll find in Isaiah that that's the reason why this is going to be brought to an end, because of their wickedness. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, or the valley of threshing, as the margin says. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of threshing. The sun and the moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. And that is mentioned by Jesus in Matthew 24, and we'll find it's also mentioned in Isaiah 13 about this sun and the moon. Then what happens? Zechariah 3, verse 16. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake, but the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. Now, with God prophesying here that he will roar out of Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, that would fit the command back in Isaiah that the Israel people were to raise up the banner. Raise up Jesus Christ and his word where? In Zion. Verse 17, so shall ye know that I am the Lord your God, dwelling in Zion, my holy mountain. Then shall Jerusalem be holy, and there shall no strangers pass to her any more. This has to be the day of the kingdom, because it is a deliverance of Israel, destruction of the wicked, and then here, no strangers passing through Zion anymore. All would have to be believers in Zion. And notice in verse 14, it is called the Day of the Lord. And we'll find that same phrase in Isaiah 13. Let's go back there. Now we'll reread verse 4. The noise of a multitude in the mountains, like as of a great people, a tumultuous noise of the kingdoms of the nations gathered together, the Lord of hosts mustereth the host of the battle. They come from a far country, from the end of heaven, even the Lord and the weapons of his indignation, to destroy the whole land. Howl ye, for the day of the Lord is at hand, it shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. That day of the Lord is used here as it is in Zechariah and quite a few other places, and it always describes a time when God destroys the wicked and the enemies of God. It's called the Day of the Lord. Notice it is God who will be doing the destroying. Day of the Lord is at hand. It shall come as a destruction from the Almighty. Therefore shall all hands be faint, and every man's heart shall melt, and they shall be afraid. Pangs and sorrow shall take hold of them. They shall be in pain as a woman that travaileth. They shall be amazed one at another. Their faces shall be as flame. The margin says in that verse 8, it says they will wonder. In other words, they will be absolutely startled with what is happening upon the earth. They will not understand it, and that, of course, would fit the enemies of God, the Antichrist of this age, because to tell you the truth, they are very, very confident of their victory. They think they literally have the world in their grasp, that our power is gone, that nothing we can do will stop this military onrush of the Antichrist Red Communists. They are taking over nation after nation with literally no opposition. So they are very confident. I can understand, with God turning this thing around, why it says their faces shall be as flames. They will be very red-faced. They'll be blushing because of the turnaround that will come upon them literally in an instant. Verse 9. Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, cruel both with wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he shall destroy the sinners thereof out of it. Who will be destroyed? The wicked and the sinners. We know from about 60 years of control of various nations by the communists that they destroy the righteous. Anyone who does not go along with their criminal rule is destroyed, and they exalt the wicked. The men who come into positions of power under world communism are the most evil and wicked, immoral men that have ever walked upon the face of the earth. They are the ones which are exalted. And God says that this whole thing here is going to turn this around, and he's going to destroy the wicked, or the sinners, out of the land. Verse 10, for the stars of heaven and the constellations thereof shall not give their light, the sun shall be darkened in his going forth, and the moon shall not cause her light to shine. So here is that same phrase which makes this fit what we read in Joel 3, and also that which was spoken by Jesus in Matthew 24, and perhaps we should read that in Matthew 24, especially for new people, because so many of our church-going people today have been confused by things which are taught out of this end-time prophecy of Matthew 24. So it's very important that we establish the time here. Matthew 24, most of this chapter is Jesus' answer to the question, which is in verse 3, where the disciples ask him, tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world? That Greek word there, translated world, is eon or age. Doesn't mean the end of the planet. The end of the age. And they're asking for the sign. Now, verse 21, of course, is a favorite of the rapture preachers, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And they then give a word description of a terrible time they call the great tribulation, and then they say, but you don't have to worry about it because you Christians will all be gone. You'll be taken off the earth in the rapture before this great tribulation. Well, let's read down here a little further, beginning in verse 29, where Jesus goes on answering the same question. Immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens shall be shaken. So it is after the tribulation that the sun and the moon are darkened. Verse 30, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. So after the tribulation, all the tribes or nations of the earth will see Jesus coming in power and great glory. Verse 31, and he shall send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. And here is the gathering of the elect, wrongly called the rapture, and when will it take place? After the tribulation we read about in verse 21. Now, most of our Christian people who attend denominational churches today are deceived because they have been tricked into sitting here quietly, watching the world as it is, and as this great power is coming upon the world, because they believe, because the preachers tell them so, they're going to be taken out of the earth before this time of trouble. Jesus did not say that. Jesus said this tribulation is coming, and then he says, after the tribulation of those days, he will gather the elect from the four winds of heaven. Now again, we have a cassette on this phrase, the sign of the Son of Man, for new people, if they do not understand the signs we will see as these things begin to come to pass. I'm not specifically interested in that at this time, because what I'm trying to establish here, before we study Isaiah 13 and 14, is the time element. This is the end of the age when these things will happen, so we must be reading about the end of the age destruction of Babylon. We're not reading in Isaiah 13 about the destruction of the ancient empire of Babylon. In Matthew 24, if you'll read the rest of that, of course, you'll see that it culminates with Jesus' rule over the earth as we read about him returning to judge, reward, and rule. So Jesus gave an end of the age prophecy. Turn to Isaiah 13. And now that you should know that we are reading an end of the age prophecy here, let us go on. Verse 11, after the prophecy about the sun and the moon and the stars, and I will punish the world for their evil. And the margin of most Bibles will tell you the phrase the world there is actually the word for Babylon. So it should have been translated, and I will punish Babylon for their evil, and the wicked for their iniquity, and I will cause the arrogancy of the proud to cease, and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a man more precious than fine gold, even a man than the golden wedge of Ophir. So again, the system of values of Babylon will be turned upside down. Man will be the most precious, gold the least. If you read Revelation 18 of the story of the destruction of Babylon, its system of values gives gold as the most valuable and men as the least. This will be reversed. Verse 13, therefore I will shake the heavens, and the earth shall remove out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger. And it shall be as the chaste roe, and as a sheep that no man taketh up, they shall every man turn to his own people, and flee every one into his own land. Now, the non-Israelites then apparently, and all other people will leave the lands where they should not be and return to their own people or their own race to their own land. So there will be a time of reestablishing the boundaries of the various people upon the earth. This is one of the things which will result in this destruction of this Babylon being spoken of here. Now today, in the time we are now in, millions of people not of our race are coming into this great nation. They're coming here from all over the world. And if we believe this prophecy, that migration will not only be stopped, but it will be reversed. They'll all go back home again, back to their own people. Now let us turn to another prophet for a second witness to this. Turn to Jeremiah 50. This is also a prophecy of the doom or the destruction of Babylon. Jeremiah 50, verse 1. The word that the Lord spake against Babylon and against the land of the Chaldeans by Jeremiah the prophet. Declare ye among the nations and publish and set up a standard. This is the same word translated banner or ensign in Isaiah 13 and Isaiah 11. So Jeremiah, prophesying against Babylon, tells the Israel people again to set up this ensign or standard, publish and conceal not. Say, Babylon is taken, Bel or Baal is confounded, Merodach is broken in pieces, her idols are confounded, her images are broken in pieces. So this is obviously a parallel prophecy of the destruction of end time Babylon. And it also includes in this prophecy the turning of Israel to God. Verse 4, in those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together, going and weeping, they shall go and seek the Lord their God. They shall ask the way to Zion with their faces thitherward, saying, come, and let us join ourselves to the Lord in a perpetual covenant that shall not be forgotten. So at the same time that Babylon is being set up for destruction, Israel is going to turn to God. And then it describes Babylon's end, verse 15, shout against her round about, she hath given her hand, her foundations are fallen, her walls are thrown down, for it is the vengeance of the Lord. Take vengeance upon her, as she hath done, do unto her. Cut off the sower from Babylon, and him that handleth the sickle in the time of harvest, for fear of the oppressing sword, they shall turn every one to his people, and they shall flee every one to his own land. So here is a double witness that this end-time destruction of Babylon, the war will be so fierce that people will turn and try to get to their own land and to their own people. Verse 20, this proves, I believe, that this is a prophecy of the very last days of this age. In those days and in that time, saith the Lord, the iniquity of Israel shall be sought for, and there shall be none, and the sins of Judah, and they shall not be found, for I will pardon them whom I reserve. This fits all that we read in other prophecies, including Isaiah 13 and 14, that the end of the age battle for the destruction of Babylon includes the turning of Israel to God. Let's go back to Isaiah 13, verse 14, and it shall be as the chaste roe, and as a sheep that no man taketh up, they shall every man turn to his own people and flee every one into his own land. Every one that is found shall be thrust through, and every one that is joined unto them shall fall by the sword. So apparently, everyone who is working for these wicked, the enemies of Israel, will also be destroyed. Verse 16, their children also shall be dashed to pieces before their eyes, their houses shall be spoiled, and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir up the Medes against them, which shall not regard silver, and as for gold, they shall not delight in it. So one of the enemies that will be stirred up against Babylon will not be subject to being bought off by gold or silver. And we can look at the past history and find that these world conspirators or these would-be world rulers often buy their compatriots with gold and silver. They actually pay them or reward them. And here is an enemy which God will raise up against them, which will not accept their gold and silver. Their bows also shall dash the young men to pieces, and they shall have no pity on the fruit of the womb. Their eyes shall not spare children. Now here is, in the next few verses, a description of Babylon's end. And as we read this, you will recognize from history that this did happen to ancient Babylon, to the ancient Babylonian Empire, and especially the city. Verse 19. And Babylon, the glory of kingdoms, the beauty of the Chaldees' excellency, shall be as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. It shall never be inhabited, neither shall it be dwelt in from generation to generation, neither shall the Arabian pitch tent there, neither shall the shepherds make their fold there, but wild beasts of the desert shall lie there, and their houses shall be full of doleful creatures, and owls shall dwell there, and satyrs shall dance there, and the wild beasts of the island shall cry in their desolate houses, and dragons in their pleasant palaces, and her time is near to come, and her days shall not be prolonged. Now that prophecy did come to pass in the ancient city, and in fact, it still is in existence today. It still pertains today. The Arab guides, I understand, who take tourists to the ruins of this ancient city of Babylon absolutely refuse to stay overnight there. They will not pitch their tents and stay there. So at night, the ancient city of Babylon is completely deserted, even though during the daytime there may be tourists there. And there has been an attempt a number of times over the centuries to rebuild the ancient city of Babylon. Nothing has ever come out of it. In fact, I understand there is an archaeological team connected with the United Nations, and they are going to try to get money to rebuild that portion of ancient Babylon now, working on it, trying to collect money from the various nations for this purpose. I believe it is Antichrist who are deliberately attempting to do this to disprove this prophecy. Now, I do not believe it will come to pass, but we have somewhat of a problem here, since these last verses of Isaiah 13 have very obviously come to pass in the ancient city. Many people then take the whole passage here and assume it is all about ancient Babylon. But it cannot be, because as we have already seen, the various verses and phrases in the first part of Isaiah 13 have simply not come to pass. They did not happen, therefore they must await a future fulfillment. So I believe the entire prophecy, or the burden of Babylon, will come to pass at the end of the age on what we call end time Babylon, a present day Babylonian control empire over the whole world, called Mystery Babylon, Revelation 17 and 18. Of course, I suppose that's why it's called a mystery. Now, I also believe that this prophecy goes right on in chapter 14. I do not believe this is a separate prophecy, partly because it begins with the word for. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel, and set them in their own land. And the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. So these other things are going to come to pass in verse 13, because the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel. So what we read in chapter 14, I believe, is going to come to pass as a fulfillment of this whole prophecy of chapter 13 and 14. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel, and set them in their own land. And the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. And the people shall take them, and bring them to their place, and the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants, and handmaids, And they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. So Israel is going to take control over those who had captured them. So Israel in her own land must be going to become a captive people. Now, I think it's true, most of you realize, that we in America are really under the control of strangers, aliens. If you will look at the United States government and the government of our brethren in Canada and Europe, you will find most of them in top rulership or places of rulership are not of our race. They are strangers. They are aliens. And so they have, by capturing our government, captured our people. And this was to happen to the house of Jacob in their own land. Verse 3. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve. Israel would be a captive in hard bondage in their own land and then delivered. And then he goes on now about the king of Babylon. Verse 4. That thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. When this happens in Israel, you will take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased? The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted and none hindereth. And here is proof again that this has not come to pass in the past. It must be a future prophecy. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. So in Israel's land, they will become a captive. Then they will capture their capturers. And then they will sing or take up a proverb against Babylon, which will prophesy what Isaiah did in verse 13, the doom of Babylon, and finally it will end up with the whole earth at rest and quiet, and they will break forth into singing. Now that's as far as I'm going to go this time, because I want to get into the details of this Isaiah 14 the next time. Since it's going to take quite a lot of time to explain this, I would suggest, before the next time, that you read the rest of Isaiah 14. Because some will doubt that we can put together these terms. The king of Babylon in verse 4, Lucifer in verse 12, and verse 25 he is called the Assyrian, and then the prophecy ends talking about the land of Palestine. The king of Babylon, Lucifer, Assyria, and the land of Palestine. How can it all fit together? Well, God willing, next time we will do that to show you that this prophecy, as given, has a future fulfillment, and it makes sense, and it is a prophecy of Israel's deliverance at the end of this eon or the end of this age. Let's stand. Our Father, the God of Israel, we thank you for thy words of prophecy. We know that your words shall come to pass. We pray that you'll help us to understand it, preach these things, and especially to raise up the banner of Jesus Christ for the Israel people to see. Give them thy word, thy spirit, and Jesus to rally around as this age draws to a close.